You're not sick, Amelia, no.
No?
No, you're a little farsighted.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
This is the Farsighted Network.
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy the show. Woo!
Hey, everybody. This is Dino.
And Michelle.
And we want to talk to you about our podcast.
Guys, would you please? We're trying to record a promo here for our podcast.
A podcast about horror movies and video games.
A podcast about family and friends.
Yes, that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Maybe we'll put a little bit of faith in there, too.
And being decent to each other.
Sounds good to me.
Hey, Nico, what should we call it?
Podcast.
On the Farsighted Network.
Sam Furstenberg, director of the martial art classic American Ninja and the breakdance iconic movie Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo. And you are listening to Grindhouse Messiah with Justin and Blaine.
Welcome back to Grindhouse Messiah. We are here with some special guests, but before I introduce them, let my co-host say hello. What's up, Blaine?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. And this week we get to talk about some Andy Sidaris films with a couple people that I've known for a while, and they won't let me come on their podcast, so I had to invite them on mine. We have Liam, who I'll I've known for like 20 years now, but the better half, the half that I actually wanted on the show is the close and personal friend of Lou Diamond Phillips, Josh Alvarez.
Hello. So
Josh, why don't you introduce yourself to folks, and then Liam, you can do the same.
What's up, guys? My name is Josh.
What do you do, Josh?
Oh, you wanted to. All right.
Do the whole fake, man. Come on.
Yeah, man. Pitch that shit, dog.
Sound cool, goddammit.
I am one half of the Cinepunks podcast with my friend Liam O'Donnell, who is on the show with me right now. And I am a singer in a band called Cross Keys and in a band called Aspect Ratio. And I am a solo artist as well. And that's me. That's it. That's all I got.
Man. And your friend Lou good. Diamond Phillips. And
yeah, you're really friends. Close friends.
I'm good buds with Lou Diamond Phillips because I have a T-shirt that says that's the cover from the Wilson Phillips You're in Love single. But it has a picture of instead of the Wilson Phillips ladies, it's Lou Diamond Phillips and both Luke and Owen Wilson.
I know, so, it's a pretty badass shirt, I have to say. It's a pretty badass shirt.
It's available through adultcrashing.com, my very good friend Brian's website, where you'll find such classic hardcore-themed gem T-shirt says, this is almost a Fugazi T-shirt, and, you know, all these kinds of things that only a certain group of people will find amusing.
Well, I find them amusing, so I guess I'm included. And, Liam, why don't you tell folks here a little bit about yourself?
I just realized, have we actually known each other for 20 years? It's, like, long.
No, it's legit. Like, I met you the year before I started college. So, because I met you when I came to visit Ryan Weatherhead.
That's right.
But anyway.
That's right. Oh, my gosh. So I'm Liam O'Donnell. I am the editor-in-chief of Cinepunks.com in both its written and audio formats and on Cinepunks. Well, I guess not just on Cinepunks, but I am also the co-host of four podcast now, which is just too many podcasts.
So many good ones, though.
That's fair. Me and Josh are co-hosts of and co-creators of the flagship podcast of Cinepunks.com, Cinepunks. I also host a horror podcast with my friend Justin Luer called Horror Business. I host I co-host a Eric Roberts podcast with Doug Tilley called Eric Roberts is the Fucking Man. And I now also with Doug Tilley and managing editor of Cinepunks, Adriana Gober, host a comic podcast called The Flight Stuff about comic book Alpha Flight, the Canadian superhero team. Yeah, so that's four. Other than that, I don't know. I don't know what else I do that's worthwhile other than those things. Other than, you know, I'm a dad. Oh, let me mention one thing. I also co-run with Haunt Love a t-shirt website called Rough Cut Shirts, roughcutt-shirts.com. Go check that out. We're dropping a new thing. It should be out by the time this episode comes out.
Awesome. Yes. And we'll definitely plug those for sure. And I have not yet purchased a Rough Cut shirt, but I've been eyeing them up, so I'll be getting one soon. I have to figure out which shirt. So
yeah, I mean, you already missed the first drop, but you'll see what happens.
Well, yeah, that's why neither of them were quite my steez. I know something's going to hit soon though.
Wait,
I know.
Hold on. Evil Dead is not your steez?
Dude, I don't know if we should.
What are you doing on this show?
Josh, what did I tell you? This is the thing. We're here because we love Justin, not because we agree with any of his opinions on anything.
Why I'm not allowed on your show, because I have bad opinions. Yeah.
The funny thing is, I think the first time I ever met you, Justin, was when we went to go see Social Distortion together. Right?
Yeah. That's a good opinion. Night. That was a fun time. And we had good Asian food beforehand.
Yeah. It was pretty fun. It was a fun night. But that was the night that they had repaved Delaware Ave because the Pope was in town. And me and the bass player from my band, Crosskeys, we rode our bikes there. And so our legs were covered in tar. And then the festival pier was all sand. So we, in effect, tar and feathered ourselves. And that was the first night that I met you.
So, oh, man. Yeah, I have a picture of us both looking like big, large, sweaty men because we were both big, large, sweaty men. So
Yeah. Hey, man. It's called a work of art, sir.
Oh, man. Well, I could probably just talk about nostalgic stuff, but I think people want to talk about movies a little bit. So one of the things that worked out for us in trying to decide what movies to talk about with you guys is that you guys hadn't seen any Sidaris or that much Sidaris and had wanted to. I've wanted to, and Blaine's been trying to get me to for a while. So we were like, perfect opportunity. So Blaine kind of picked out the movies that he thought would be the best ones. I think it was you that kind of picked them out, Blaine. And I know you have a little bit more history with Andy Sidaris films. Tell us a little bit about Andy Sidaris.
Yeah, I mean, Andy Sidaris is one of those just kind of strange characters of like this low to mid budget cinema, basically self-made guy, Emmy award winning director and coordinator, I guess, for Wide World of Sports, the Olympics, the NFL. He's literally the creator of the Honey Shot, which is the shot we've all grown to love of the cheerleaders, you know, kind of when you fade in and out of commercial breaks. So he's a strange character who,
which totally fits in with his movies.
He made like this string of movies that, you know, for our generation growing up with like USA Up All Night, you know, going to your buddy's house and watching Cinemax movies and getting like weird boners and stuff. This is like all kind of part of that. Like to me, like, and we talk about this a lot on the show, is all this shit that I consumed in the need to see boobs between the ages of like 11 and 18. And these are films that just kind of popped up, especially like Savage Beach popped up a lot on those kind of shows. And they were the kind of movies where you would just like sit through it, just waiting, like, just come on, titty, come on. I grew to kind of grow on me. There's like this great nostalgia, just kind of this part of this era of like really kind of like innocent films, these nudie flicks, but that have like great story, these pretty, you know, entertaining scripts, and, you know, kind of gets you into that era of like Bikini Car Wash, some of the later Emmanuel films that didn't take themselves so serious, and I don't know, it just leads it to the kind of this fun era of like actually entertaining softcore pornography.
Yeah. And right. I mean, honestly, it's really cool to think of, or not cool, but really funny to think about the fact that, did you know that he went to Southern Methodist University? I find that very, very, just, I don't know, appropriate. The man was a devout Christian growing up in a very, very devout family. And then he went on to make movies that they dubbed the Triple B's for Bullets, Bombs, and Boobs. So I think he kind of took a hard left turn at some point.
He's a good Texas boy, you know, good Cowboys fan, you know. We all love Jesus and titties.
Oh, man, that's a good segue, I think. I don't know, Jesus and titties. But, no, so, guys, what on your first – am I right in saying that this was one of – both of you didn't have a lot of experience with Sidaris going into this?
I have seen these movies
on
Cinemax. But as a child, it's one of those, like, just like what Blaine was saying, like, oh, these are these movies that happened like at weird hours on Cinemax. You know what I mean? Like when your parents are asleep and like Saturday Night Live goes off and you're like, wait a minute, something's happening here. and this is what was happening. So it's funny because like I do remember them vaguely, but this is the first time I actually just watched them. And it's really funny because I don't know if you guys know, I love Molokai. Did you know that?
No.
I did not know that.
I actually had released last year a solo record that was entitled The Lonely Friend, which
I've listened to quite a few times. Yeah, now that you say that, I'm starting to, huh.
And the picture from that record for the cover was taken by my wife of a church on Molokai that was made by Father Damien, who's like the patron saint of that island, because the thing that they did not mention in Hard Ticket to Hawaii is that Molokai is the island where King Kamehameha exiled the lepers to in the 1800s. And the exile was in effect until something as recent as like 1973. Jeez. So, but yeah, Molokai is like one of my favorite places on the planet. Like if I were to have to be somewhere else other than Philadelphia, that's where I'd want to be. And it's really funny because like this movie was in what, 1986? And it still looks exactly the same as it did then as when I was there like 3 years ago. So it was a pretty interesting watch for me. That was definitely my favorite of the two.
I had sent you a text and I don't know if you had a chance, but I really would like you to cover the Hard Ticket to Hawaii theme song on ukulele. But
you know what's funny? Yeah. I was actually trying to figure it out, but then I was listening to it and I was like, I don't know if I can hit those beautiful cascading notes. I'm not so sure. But for you, Harlan, I will try. I'm just going to put that out there. I will give it a shot.
All I can ask is for your best ever. But... Liam, how about you and Andy Sidaris?
You know, I feel like I missed out not having Cinemax. Like, I didn't have Cinemax. I didn't even have cable till, like, middle school, I think. And my mom was not down with pay channels. That wasn't a thing. She was like, why do we need those things? That's not, you know, I think she actually got HBO when I was like in my later 20s. And I remember thinking like, oh, now that I'll never be home again, you finally get the pay channel. but yeah, I didn't have Cinemax growing up and I was unaware of these movies. I didn't even remember seeing them. I think maybe Malibu Express I might have seen, like the poster looked familiar, but I don't even remember seeing them much in like the VHS places. You know, there's a lot of movies that maybe I hadn't seen, but I remember the covers of just from going to the video store so much. My relationship with Andy Sidaris started though actually a while ago. It was probably, I'm trying to think back, I think it was 2010 was the first year I went to Fantastic Fest. And at Fantastic Fest they had an event. I'm trying to remember what it's called. I think it's called like 100 Greatest Kills or something like that. But basically, you know, later in the night, not all of the things they do at Fantastic Fest are just film screenings. They'll do like fun interactive events. And one of them is these guys basically have edited together 100 of their favorite kills ever. And they just play those and people hang out and yell and I guess drink. I don't, but other people did. And it's just sort of a raucous event. And what was cool about it at the film festival is that they gave out free movies and that was cool. So anyways, I went to this thing not really even knowing what it was because I'd never been before. And at first I was kind of like, oh, this is kind of corny. It's just like kills from movies. I don't know if I care about this, but the hosts were funny and the crowd got into it. And after a while, I was kind of into it. And I remember the scene from Hard Ticket to Hawaii when my man blasts the dude on the fucking skateboard with a rocket launcher.
With a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That was in the thing. And they were like, of course, we got to play the classic. Everybody knows it. Hard Ticket to Hawaii. And I was like, how have I never heard of this movie? I need to find this movie. And so, like, 2010, I put it on my must-see list. Oh. Here it is, 2019, I finally got to see it. 9 years. But the reality is, when it comes to, like, all those obscure movies on my must-see list, if it isn't – the way I see it the most often is it screens, either at an Alamo near us or the guys from Exhumed in Philly or somewhere, you know, I get a chance. Or it comes out on Blu-ray finally, and I buy the Blu-ray because I've been meaning to see it. The idea of, like, searching for, like, let's say, a compilation DVD set that a certain nice someone sent to me before this episode, I would never do that. Like, I don't even – I haven't paid money for a DVD in 6 years. Like, I just – I won't do it. So the reality was – These movies were never going to show up on streaming, so I was just never going to see them until you suggested them for this. And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. Turns out they're actually coming out on Blu-ray now, so I would have seen them when they did come out of Blu-ray because I'll definitely buy them.
It's the weirdest thing. On the day we're recording, I get the email from Mill Creek that they're putting both of these two movies out on Blu-ray. Like, it's just the weirdest timing. But, yeah, they literally announced it today. So when people are listening, that means they're only a couple of months away. I think they're coming out in early April. So.
Hopefully there's some deleted scenes.
Yeah, and to everybody who hasn't seen these movies, buy those Blu-rays, but also buy that DVD collection. I strongly believe, and I've argued this for years, it is the greatest dollar, like, per dollar purchase of DVDs. It's 12 movies for like $8, and like six of them are bangers.
It was only six when I ordered it for Leo.
Dude, it's so good.
I 100% believe you, and if I had a time machine to go back to 2000, I would certainly pay money for a DVD. But here we are in the year of our Lord 2019. And I will not pay money for a DVD.
Well, that's fair. And if anybody listening wants to check out the movies and not pay, both of them are actually on Tubi, T-U-B-I, Tubi TV, right now. There's a couple commercial breaks, but that's you can check them out free there. So, you know, check them out.
I paid to see them. I paid to see them on Amazon, because, you know.
Oh, were they on Amazon? Then I probably would have seen them eventually. I would pay money to see these on Amazon. I would have definitely paid.
It was like $4 to rent them or whatever, so. I watched it that way. Even though Harlan told me about like Tubi and all that other stuff, I was like, you know what? Though we're just gonna let's go with the thing.
You know what? The version you watched is probably better than what Tubi has, and it doesn't have weird commercials in it.
Yeah. It definitely has.
Because I totally watched something on Tubi recently, and I watched a commercial with the general, that weird little guy that sells insurance. And,
oh God!
And the general, stay in line. That was like
it was bizarre because he was doing this like buddy thing with Shaquille O'Neal.
No, I was about to ask you if Shaquille O'Neal was in it.
He was in all those
commercials now with the general. Man, that guy must be on some hard times. I don't know what happened to him.
I don't get it, man.
I love Desperate Fat Shaq. It's like one of my favorite things in the world.
Wow. Desperate Fat Shaq. That's a thing?
Oh yes. What I also like is the willingness of Desperate Fat Shaq to like openly fight with Charles Barkley live on air.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I love watching – like, I actually love watching TNT NBA pregame for that reason. I like to watch the two of them fight. It's great.
I never watched it in reality, but they used to play the clips on Desus and Mero all the time, and it was one of my favorite parts of the show.
Oh, yeah. And neither of them have – like, there's no preparation. There's nothing. It's just two psychos arguing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, it's great.
Fair enough. That's like the thesis of Cinepunks, the podcast show, flagship podcast on our network. That's two maniacs.
two elderly, out-of-touch maniacs are
here. Yeah. That's basically what it is.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you there. especially since you both are nice and much significantly older than me. I mean, like a year. But still, you're old men. So old. So, Blaine, why don't you let's start talking about Malibu Express a little bit here specifically. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the plot summary, the synopsis of that their film.
All right. It, a smooth-talking private eye is assigned the task of investigating who is behind the high-tech computer technology leaks to the Russians. Jeez, IMDb, that is like a big spoiler alert to that movie.
But you know what, though? Is it really? Because let me tell you something. That Russian computer stuff, though it's in there, I didn't think it was very, like, in your face. It was just, like, more like, why is there a drag queen here? And then, like, you know, why? It was, like, a very confusing movie. In a lot of regards.
Oh, just yes.
Just working through it, I was like, what the shit am I watching?
Since you just read the IMDb, I'm going to read the wiki to see if it helps us a little bit with it, right? Espionage threatens the security of American computer technology with a skirt-chasing private investigator who is assigned by federal intelligence agencies to root out the spies among the rich, oversexed socialites unknowingly supporting them. You know, that's a one sentence, by the way. That was the longest freaking sentence ever.
And once again, that's kind of the movie we all watched.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, those are, like, aspects of the movie. Like, depending on what angle you're in, like, what parts you, like, don't get on your phone at.
But the movie is so much this, like, it's literally like a blue Agatha Christie or Murder, She Wrote. Like, it's like a very tame... very sort of fake, salacious murder mystery, but then with fucking. Like, the plot is like it would be in any of these fucking Perry Mason or any
Columbo.
Any show for old people on TNT is the plot of this movie. Only then they're just like, but we'll spice it up with actual nudity and sex. You know, like it's not like the story is very gritty. It's very tame, but then there's all this nudity that just happens for no reason.
Right. And it helps that it's shot on like that ABC film stock.
Oh yeah.
So it's got like that daytime TV sort of vibe to it, you know, being it's so weird in that sense. And see, the whole time I was watching, it kind of reminded me of like early Troma stuff, but like if it was made by like parrot heads.
Oh, that's a great way to put it, man. Having just watched a couple of those early Troma like exploitation films, that's totally dead on.
Yeah, it was like, oh man, somebody's trying to appeal to that whole Jimmy Buffett Eagles crowd.
You pointed out earlier that Andy Sidaris had some pull. He was an Emmy Award-winning television guy. His pull shows in this film as he literally has Regis and Joy Philbin cameo as talk show hosts. I mean, that's pretty huge for a movie that's like, I'm pretty sure they agreed to it not knowing what the hell the film was, because when they watched it, they were probably like, oh shit, like we're in that movie. But man, it's pretty fantastic that they're in this film.
And they're like declaring their love to each other and explaining like how to make things work over time. And like a guy's
getting all shot up.
He's getting all shut up after watching these homemade porno tapes he made.
Oh man. Sweet baby Jesus.
Lord.
You made me watch that. That happened to my eyeballs because of you, just so you know.
Yeah. Hey, I blame Blaine.
The other funny thing about this is that, so our, like, our main private eye dude, he looks like every, like, Towns of Finland t-shirt I've ever seen. Like, he's like, right. Looks yes, like exactly. Very stereotypically, like, what I've come to accept as, like, the visage of, like, a gay man in the 80s, and he's running around like boning all these ladies. Such a weird movie, man.
He's not just boning, right? The plot hinges around the idea that there is, in fact, no heterosexual woman in the entire. By the way, where are they? Palm Springs, L.A.? Yeah. I have no idea where they are.
He says Palm Springs in the one.
At a certain point, so they're in Southern California. So apparently, no woman can deny this man who, by the way, is randomly a Southern California cowboy. I guess he's there from Texas.
He's from Lubbock, I think they say, or Abilene.
It's Abilene, I think. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
insane. Why? For so what ridiculous. Possible yeah. reason? So we basically have this mashup of cowboy and beach bum who just walks around Southern California banging every woman he comes into contact with indiscriminately. Just
yeah.
By the way, as if this isn't the 80s, as if it's still the 70s, but it's definitely the 80s.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to feel about all that, but and then just happens to, like, I guess kind of solve a mystery, maybe? Not really?
Oh, man.
Yeah, maybe.
And not shoot anyone because he can't shoot it. And that running gag, the first time it happened, I thought, this is not going to be the gag in the movie. But then by the end of the movie, I was like, okay, that's fine. They stuck it out. I'm okay with it.
I was fine with it. I thought it was funny. I was into it.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that really caught my attention, which is pretty ridiculous, is that the scene, so there are a couple things, but the scene when he's like, I gotta go to my boat, and then, like, the two ladies are in the bed, and then the dudes break in to try and get the diamonds or whatever, and the one guy with the beard who gets shot in the ear, he's the one that's, like, leading this assault on the boat, right? And he looks a lot like Judd Apatow to me, and I was like, yo, Judd Apatow is about to assail this boat to get back stolen diamonds or whatever. Oh, wait, am I messing stuff up? No, to get back pictures, the film, that's it. Who's gonna get the film? And it was like just really, really weird to me. And then, like, the ladies
are in the other movie. I was like, yeah, diamonds
in the other movie. Yeah. Sorry. So he's trying to get the film, and then, like, the two ladies are in the bed. He's like, when I say jump, and, like, there's guns, and the guy gets shot in the ear, and the girls are screaming. And then the next day, their idea is, like, let's go back to that boat. It's like, hang out with that dude.
It's ridiculous. And like, I think he writes some really great dialogue, great in, like, air quotes, because – but I really like it. Like, I think they're hilarious. Like, he says – I understand he's sitting with the two girls at one point. I mean, he's always sitting with two girls, but whatever. He's with two girls at one point, and the one says, I understand you're a private investigator. The other girl turns to him and goes, we'd want you to investigate our privates. Like, really? Okay. Wow. Like, that's horror movie stuff, like, straight out. I mean, it really was.
It's brutal, man. It's brutal.
Yeah.
And we'll get to it in the next movie, too. But in both films, there's a joke about your hands being lethal weapons. And this particular one, when he says, these hands, they're lethal weapons, the woman says to him,
be careful playing if you with
play
yourself.
With yourself. Yeah.
Brutal.
I just have a joke for you guys. Did you hear about the one where she got raped this afternoon by two homosexuals?
Wow, yeah, when that thing happened, I was like, what is going on right now?
And, like, you're just making fun of the maid, like, for no reason.
Jesus Christ. This does not cast white people in a very positive light. I'm going to say that. As a person of color, I'm just going to say, you know, this is, as a kid growing up, so it's funny when we're talking about the Cinemax thing. I realized that, like, my parents didn't have Cinemax. My Uncle Rudy had Cinemax, and Uncle Rudy's son is Bad Michael, who is, like, one of my first friends. Right? So we'd always, like, sleep over at Bad Michael's house, and then that's when these movies would happen to us. And it was just like, man, Uncle Rudy loves these movies, and that's what I. It was really, really funny. It was, yeah. I don't know why I brought that up, but I
like how you put that as that's when these movies happened to us, not when we saw these movies.
No. Well, these were events.
Josh, I think you were trying to make the point that these movies colored your vision of what white people were.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's fair. I think
that's
what it was. I mean, that's the thing. I will say this. So I'm in thinking about these. Both of these movies, but just at least this first one, right? The movie is an interesting combination of salacious and innocent at the same time. Right. It is super salacious in that all of the nudity is unjustified. The race car driver young lady uses her breasts as a weapon multiple times just to distract men so that they can be assaulted by other men.
And their last name is Knockers. With an H.
Yeah, it's Knockers. Yeah.
And there's lots of, you know, not obviously like hardcore sex or anything, but there's suggested sex throughout the movie. And yet there's nothing like dark, like everything is very innocent, but from a very 80s point of view. And in the 80s, a certain amount of sexism and homophobia.
Yeah, like rampant use of the hard F word.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Those things were not considered that big a deal. And what was so weird is to watch a movie, it's kind of like when the first time this is a weird comparison, but just go with me here. Have you ever shown to someone who is younger and doesn't remember the 80s a movie like Monster Squad?
Yeah.
And you suddenly realize like, oh yeah, I'm used to all these hard Fs and all this other stuff. Like, it doesn't bum me out. In this movie, it's like if you took out all that stuff, this movie would actually be, again, not quite innocent because it's sexy, but like almost like a naive sexy movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's only that weird anachronistic stuff where you're like, that's, you know, rape joke, not okay. Homophobic stuff, not okay. You know, and then just like as a note, there's a lot of white people in this movie. It's just like, where is everybody? All that stuff is kind of weird. On the other hand, I don't think I've ever seen a more screwball, silly, fun sex movie in my life. And a lot of sex stuff in the 80s was trying to be as fun as this. You know what I mean? Like, in a sense, this movie's way more fun and goofy than like a fucking Porky's, which is like kind of a gross movie. I mean, I would say at a certain level, this movie's less gross than Revenge of the Nerds. You know,
Because I recently watched Hard Bodies, and I was like, oh, this movie's like kind of just nasty. It's not fun. Like, it's ugly and mean spirited. And watch this, I'm like, oh, this is really fun. Like, and even I think Andy Sidaris, I like to think that he thinks that he's being progressive with having like cross dressing characters, because he's like, oh, the bad guy's gonna call him a faggot. You know,
Yeah, that's a very good point, that it's the bad guy. Like, I do get the feeling that for his time, Andy Sidaris actually thinks he's very progressive. And that, you know, that the bad guy in this movie is the one who's saying awful stuff. And that, the only one that I recognize as a recurring character was the character who, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say, like, is that character just a cross-dresser, a performer, whatever. But it was, like, the same actor in both movies. That's, like, kind of cool that person at least got work twice, you know?
Right. And as you watch a lot of – because we're still at the point where he was, like, kind of assembling his normal squad. Because as you get later, he's in those other films as well, playing, cross-dressing characters that aren't actually trans or gay. There's kind of these cross-dressing characters that are strange in 80s and misunderstood. But yeah, he reoccurs in a lot of the films as that role, and I think he just thought like, oh, this is my buddy who does this thing. And I like that our cowboy detective's like, man, he becomes a beautiful woman at night.
That's what I was going to say. I would actually maybe be a little, not offended, but like worried about that character more if it wasn't for that moment, which I think for the time is super, like,
super progressive and super.
Yeah, that this guy is admitting, like, oh yeah, she's hot. You know, when that dude puts on makeup and a dress, super hot. You know, I would hit on them. Like, that's hard for people to talk about now in freaking 2019.
Right, and they don't play it for laughs either. Like, I mean, it's still played like this is just a character. Of course, it's the guy with the beard. Okay. But it is kind of, you know, it's funny that the other guy's got a beard. But besides that, though, that character's treated, I mean, compared, like we're talking about before, you know, you think of gay characters in like your kind of regular sex comedies, they're usually just complete fodder, for insults and by the good guys. So, yeah, no, there's a lot of, it's really like a strange kind of singular kind of movie compared to what's going on around it.
Yeah.
That's totally fair.
And it's also not torturing.
The thing that actually was mildly confusing to me is like, dude, so when these came out, like, who were they aiming these at?
That's a good
question. What I mean? Like, who were these pictures like focused for? Like, and I mean, like, what? So it's like, were they like, yo, you know what's going to happen? Cable TV, and then a bunch of these adolescent boys are going to watch these movies. That's where we're going to make the dime, son. That's where it's happening. And it's like, really? Was that the plan?
I think these were definitely planned for VHS, though. Like, at this point, VHS was starting to become a real thing. I don't think it had hit the heights it would by the end of the 80s, but I'm sure the home market was part of what he was thinking of when he's making these movies. But, you know, I mean, I guess part of it is like, movies that have this much sort of sexiness in them also have a lot of, like, I don't know, emotional intrigue, guilt. Like, it's just interesting that, like, all the sex happens in these movies. It just doesn't matter. Like, no one cares. Like, yeah, he's just going to have more sex. And it's just like, you just accept it. Like, all right, that's just what happens now. Sexy time. And then there's going to be a car chase for no reason.
Right. And I mean, I think, and you're talking about like who this was made for. I think this was just straight up made for our dads. Like, because a lot of like the action and everything is as best as they can do to reproduce what's bringing people in to watch movies. They're like, hey, what if we took all the best parts of these films as well as the best parts of these, let's admit, boring softcore porno movies from the time and make something that's actually like fun and watchable. I mean,
yeah.
What are you thinking, Josh? Just say it, man. You didn't think this movie was very watchable.
No, I did not. This was a very, very heavy of a, hey man, I wonder what's going on Facebook kind of movie. And yeah. I get it. You know what I mean? Like, let's talk about the fact that there's a DeLorean in this movie and a Ferrari.
I love
and
that.
Like all these, those are the things that I was like, yo, look at that. An actual DeLorean that's not a time machine from the 80s. What the fuck is going on? You know, that I found to be entertaining. But overall, the movie itself is boring as fuck. I couldn't get into it, man. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm an outlier in this.
And no, you're not. You're not an outlier. I didn't hate. Well,
I think it's because I watched the other one first. I think it's because I watched Hard Ticket to Hawaii first.
I agree with you. I think that the order I watched them in fucked this one up for me, especially because I also watched Hard Ticket first, and the drop off is steep.
Having watched this one first and not knowing anything about Hard Ticket, I just thought, oh, okay, well, this is what these are, which like. I will say enough ludicrous stuff happens in this movie that I was mostly entertained the entire time. However, not quite enough. I think what seems to – and we'll talk – I guess we'll talk about Hard Ticket more in a sec. But
yep.
I will say what Hard Ticket brings to the table that this movie doesn't is more action. This movie does not have explosions in the same way or the same amount of shootouts. In fact, one of the running jokes, as we said, was that our main character can't shoot anyone anyway, so some of the shootout scenes are kind of boring. And you know, honestly, there's a little bit more in this movie screwball. Like, this movie maybe owes a little bit more to a movie like Cannonball Run or something, you know, like a little bit more like goofy 70s comedy a little bit. And the next movie is trying a bit more to be something it really can't be, which is like a spy movie. But that was more amusing to me than this one, which, again, it's fine. I just didn't find it as engaging.
Well, and I think we're ready to move on. But before we do, the one thing I wanted to read here I found that I thought was great was a TV Guide when this movie was released, gave the film 2 out of 4 stars, which, you know, is actually respectable. But they noted that the shower scene between the lesbian couple was the hottest shower scene ever put to film. And TV Guide said that. So I just want to put that out there, right?
That's so – can I just say that was very funny to me for them to say that, because that scene is so distracting because those actresses cannot figure out how to stop looking at the camera. They just keep looking at the camera because I'm assuming they've shot Playboy films.
They were,
this point, Playboy had done these like films for their audience where you could buy them, and there tended to be, because Playboy doesn't do – you know, penetrative stuff in there or whatever, it would just be a woman walking around
staring,
you know,
at the camera,
sultry undressing, sultry showering, not doing anything, actually just being a nude woman. And in those things, they're always staring at the camera. So in that scene, those two women can't stop looking at the camera, and every time they do it, they also then look away very quickly, revealing the fact that they're not supposed to be looking at the camera. Like, it's not like Sedaris is sitting there being like, stare at the camera. I really get the feeling he's telling them like, stop looking at the camera, but they can't stop themselves. And it's, to me, totally distracting the whole time.
That is hilarious. Well,
I think the best thing about Malibu Express is the poster, which actually is featured in Hard Ticket to Hawaii. So.
Dude, so weird, right? So weird. What is that?
The Andy Sedaris cinematic universe? Is that?
Yeah.
This contiguous universe. Yeah.
Well, it's great. So
it's very similar.
Yeah.
It's very similar. You have Lethal. Into,
Right, right.
You keep interrupting, sir.
All right, no, I know it's okay. We keep interrupting each other. It's not like we've been podcasting for a year and a half together or anything. No, in all seriousness, dude, I want you to introduce this film because you're better at that. So tell us about this movie.
In Molokai, two undercover drug enforcement agents are after a vicious drug kingpin, but on the way, they will also have to deal with a contaminated giant fucking python.
Dude. So ridiculous. Right.
I gotta tell you guys, while we've been recording, I've been watching Hard Ticket to Hawaii in the background, and it just I think that's also kind of curbed maybe some of the things I said about Malibu Express as well, of making me kind of like it more, because this is one of I think the best of this era. So I don't know, I think it's just completely batshit.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't reach, like, raw force levels of, like, maniacism. It doesn't reach, like, the, you know, ghosts and spirits and all that other stuff. But, man, the karate-ing in here, like, the weird Confucius says jokes. Yeah. Is like, yeah, what are you doing? And, like, the snake, the fucking snake, what? Dude, unbelievable stuff. Unbelievable stuff.
I love, so the snake, they literally, the direct quote is, there's a snake infected with deadly toxins from cancer-infected rats.
Yeah.
That's how science works, dog.
Oh, science. They science the hell out of that, man. Oh, man. Oh. So Josh, you brought up the Confucius Say comments, which are, I don't even know what to say. But that's where the other deadly weapon hand joke that I said each one of these films has. He starts saying, Confucius say, man with deadly hand should be careful when putting on aftershave.
Yeah. Which, I mean, he's not wrong. Right? That's not an incorrect thing. But feels a little weird, just saying.
Being an Asian
man. Yeah, this is like, but so the thing is, though, that, like, I do know that at that time, that shit was not weird. Like, it was okay to make these jokes back then, while still having these karate masters. You know what I mean? Like, it's like so weird to me. Like, man.
And that guy totally wanted to be Steven Seagal so bad, too, with his hair pulled back and his ponytail and his,
Dude. Well, I don't think Steven Seagal was.
Oh, he might not have did a thing yet. That's a good point.
No, in 86 this movie came out, right? 85?
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
So I don't think that's a thing.
Steven Seagal wanted to be him.
Well, that's fair. But so the mostly shirtless karate man, it really was a weird vibe to me, like, as a character. Like, the way that he held himself was very strange. Like, he didn't feel – I think he's supposed to be, like, menacing because he's more physically imposing than the other guy. But he never came across that way. Even in this one fight scene, it all felt very – performative. He always felt like he was doing something ridiculous. And the worst is when he finally reunites with the girl who's been taken towards the end.
Oh my god.
And they have, like, their kiss. What was that kiss? It wasn't everything about him read to me as like, this is weird. It was a strange performance.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that, like, so they're rescuing his girlfriend or whatever, and he finds her and she's tied up with, like, her mouth is gagged. And his first thought is, let me get the midgets and chains, or whatever the fuck line he delivers.
Oh, my Dude, lord.
Say what? Like, I'm able to suspend belief or disbelief with the rest of them. But that was the one scene where I'm like, oh, hell no, son. Get that later.
But what I like about this is so what's funny is they're both ridiculous movies. But with Malibu Express, they try to create pretext, like, reasons for things to be happening that are sexy. And in this movie, they literally go, man, we got to figure this out. Let's get in the hot tub. And, like, we're meant to believe that these two agents are just like, every time they have a problem, they just get topless and get in the hot tub. That steps over a level into so ridiculous that I find it easier to follow along with than Malibu Express, which wants me to just believe these things are happening organically and naturally.
That's fair.
Yeah,
I think that's a really fair assessment. It's so off the wall that it works.
Yeah, I'd agree. So ridiculous, though. So ridiculous. But again, infinitely more watchable for me, this Hard Ticket to Hawaii. Like, a couple things with, like, Molokai. I love Molokai. the part where they are where they blow up the dude with the rocket launcher, I believe is on the west end of the island that's known as Mauna Loa. And the funny thing is, if you go there now, it still looks exactly the same as that. But there is one house on the horizon, and it is owned by the McAfee guy who made the computer antivirus software.
Oh shit!
So it's like, yeah. So like when Melania and I were there, we stayed around that part for half of our trip there, and the only thing you'll see on the horizon, aside from like weird trees and shit, is like this one house that's like elevated above all the treetops. And this one cab driver's like, "Oh, that's the McAfee house." Like, what? Like, that's not real. That guy doesn't exist in life. Yeah, 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 yeah. So when I saw that, I automatically was like, "Oh shit, Mauna Loa." So that was pretty cool, man.
Do you think
gotta go?
Oh no, absolutely. Do you think every time he drives down that road, he's like, "Man, check out that guy. Must be on some heavy doobies." Oh, that's what I would do every single day.
Oh, sweet baby Jesus. I mean, I don't know how they don't have commemorative plaques all over that island being like, this is where Hard Ticket to Hawaii was filmed. The scene where the man was exploded with the rocket launcher. You know what I mean? Like, that I would expect placards of that all over the place if that's where. If my hometown was the setting for Hard Ticket to Hawaii, guess what?
Look, the thing we need to acknowledge here is it's not ridiculous he shoots a man with a rocket launcher. It's ridiculous that he also shoots him twice, basically, you know, like,
yeah.
And then we get the shot of the skateboard rolling away. Like, how is this a real thing?
I mean he shoots the guy and then he shoots the inflatable sex doll that the guy has.
Yeah
how?
Oh my goodness.
And then at the end they kill the snake with the rocket launcher. They shoot the snake in the head with the rocket launcher,
and it only blows up the head.
It's living through the regular gunshots that just get shot right at, like, it's getting bullets through its mouth and in the head, and it's just fine. Like,
yeah, it's just sitting there, and then the rocket launcher comes into play. There's a egregious use of rocket launcher deaths in this movie. I'm gonna say it. They shoot the guy out the window with it, and then they blow up the helicopter with it. It's like, man, this rocket launcher.
Yeah, I felt like there were some. I felt like having been. I'm a big Snakes on a Plane fan, and I have to say they totally ripped some scenes directly out of this, man. The snake coming out of the toilet, like, yeah, no joke, man. And I love how the guy says to her after she tells him that it came out of the toilet. He goes, "Just when you thought it was safe to take a pee." That's like the final line, almost the final line of the movie.
Yeah,
like it's.
It's never poetic. Safe to take a pee.
It's poetic. It's a poetry. I'm into it.
It really takes it full circle in this film.
Like, no. Beauty and brains. Good move. Hard to go away.
And I love the way that they just, like, just with no shame, like, cash in on, like, every kind of, like, beach stereotype to the point where he kills a guard with a razor blade frisbee. And I like that the guard immediately puts his gun down just to toss a frisbee. Like,
oh yeah.
Oh my god, that frisbee death. That frisbee death is my favorite death of the movie. I love so that. Amazing. I love the razor blades and the frisbee. It's fantastic.
It's so ridiculous.
I love how they note that earlier. Like, these guys really take their throwing seriously, you know. and then he comes out and he's like, "Oh, don't worry, he's just a thrower." And he's like, "Oh, let me see what you got." You
know, yeah, like, he's doing all the tricks.
Even like as a dude though, like his only trick is he throws it under his leg, catches it, and then throws it. That's not that impressive. Like, anyone could do that. Plus, why does none of that guy's clothes fit? Why is he wearing long sleeve shirt and long pants on the beach in the first place? And why don't they fit him? And why can't he throw a frisbee and hold an Uzi that's on a strap so he doesn't even have to have a hand on it at the same time? None of it makes sense, let alone as he's throwing it with this young lady who he throws a frisbee with every day. He really looks like not comfortable with a frisbee in any way, shape, or form.
Oh, man.
Probably because they grabbed some guy, put him in whoever was supposed to play that character,
right,
threw him in his clothes, you know. Yeah, no, I love that, man. It's the strangeness, because, like, right now I'm watching the Kung Fu guy fight the only other, I think – non-foil Asian character at that scene. And, like, it just, it feels so awkward, but it, I don't know, it's something like we're talking about with it being, like, TV. It feels like a bad part of, like, a, I don't know, like a, what was it, Walker, Texas Ranger scene.
Yeah.
Where it's just this bad, slow, like, super slow kung fu. It's amazing, though.
Oh, Lord. Dude. You know, how about the bad Spanglish she speaks to the sumo guys?
What Ooh. The fuck was that shit about?
she speaks a lot of languages, like her favorite, like 007.
Jesus Christ. And, like, the sumo dude, the one dude looks, like, not Asian and has sideburns. Like, what the fuck is happening here, man?
But they both look at her like, what the fuck are you saying to us?
Yeah.
Like, it's so great. Like,
wow.
Oh, that's great.
Unbelievable.
We also have to go with Jimmy John's interview that we can't really, I wouldn't necessarily quote here, but when he asks the black quarterback, you know, what did you do on that play? And he just says, well, I told the ends to go deep and the white guys to keep them out.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, I don't know anything about football, but I was like, that sounds like a good plan. I don't know. Like, I guess that's how you win. But, dude, how about the fact that the director, Whitey, is
right.
actually Andy Sedaris in the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the director cameo right there.
Yeah, and I love his cameo. We didn't mention it in Malibu Express as the
yeah.
the bus, like the Winnebago driver. Man, he's fantastic popping in there.
Man. Are you guys into that? Is that a thing you guys like when, like in that scene in American Werewolf in London when Frank Oz is in there? Do you like it when, like, the people make the weird, like, appearances, cameo Johns?
I don't know. I don't really know that I have an opinion on it, to be honest. I got to think a little bit harder, I think, you know, about it.
I will get excited when I notice it, but then after I realize it, it's usually terrible. Like, it's like one of those things, like, I get, like, that fake excitement that they're trying to sell you on for a minute, and then I realize, oh, it'd be cooler if they just had, like, an actor.
Just a person who's
just
supposed
a person
to be doing this.
Deliver lines. Like, they deliver lines for a living, not a guy who's like, hey, guys, I made this movie. Wink, wink. Let's keep going.
I like that Andy Sedaris, though, in this one, plays himself. He's just a big old perv.
Yeah.
Like, and that's exactly what he clearly is since we've seen his movies. So, you know, he basically comes in and he, you know, can't stop staring at every chick's boobs that walks by him. And, oh, my God, it's that I appreciated that. So I mean, I don't know that there's anything, like, monumentally, like, astounding about this film. It's just fun. Like, this one was really fun.
Definitely, like, not as much homophobic jokes, a lot more race stuff that's weird for an Asian man to watch, but okay, we'll go with it, you know.
Do you think skater guy's friend was Filipino? He looked Filipino to me.
He looked Filipino to me. Yeah. Or at least Tongan or Samoan
yeah.
ones or
yeah,
something
yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
that. Yeah. I mean, it is Molokai, you know?
Yeah,
so,
true.
There you go.
There's a lot of very white people in Hawaii.
In Molokai. Yeah. Dude. And, like, so the funny thing about Molokai also is that it's the same square mileage as the city of Philadelphia, but there's only 7,000 people on the island.
Oh, wow.
So it's like when you're there, there's one crossroads, and it's a town called Kaunakakai. And that has there's a pizza store there called Molokai Pizza. And if you go there, you come to realize that it is owned by a white man from Newark, New Jersey.
That's awesome.
The one thing that's actually really cool about Hard Ticket to Hawaii is when they're flying into Molokai, they fly by this huge waterfall, which is the Halava Falls. And it's the one that feeds into that big pond, right? So the way you can actually do a tour to that waterfall, but it requires that you be able to hike through jungle, right? So when you sign up for it, they're like, this is like an expert level hike or whatever. But the way you sign up for it is you have to find this dude, and the dude's name is Eddie Tanaka, but he is known as the Mystic of Molokai. And the way you sign up for the tour is you go to this one place that's like across the street from Molokai Pizza called the Peddler's Inn, and he plays steel guitar there every Thursday night. So you got to go there on Thursday night and talk to Eddie T, the Mystic of Molokai, and give him $50, and then you got to meet at his house, and he walks you to that falls, right? But the thing is, so the other amazing thing about this whole story, and I know it's so ridiculous and totally tangential. But when you do the hike to Halaba Falls, you have to take with you a tea leaf, a bag of tea leaves, right? So, because when you get to the pond that the waterfall drains into, it's something like 100 feet deep or something ridiculous like this. And you have to put your tea leaves on the water. And if they float, the legend is that living inside this pond is a gigantic mo'o or lizard. And if the tea leaves float, then that means that this mo'o is inviting you to swim in his pond. But if they sink, then that means if you get in that jar, it's going to fucking eat your ass. And, like, you're going to get ate by, like, this big-ass lizard in Hawaii.
Did your tea leaf float?
Yeah.
Because tea leaves float.
Dude, I get it, but I'm just saying, Eddie T was like...
It's pretty great.
Dude, Eddie T was like, okay, put your tea leaves on the water. Like, all right, Eddie T, no problem. And I was wearing, like, you know, swim trunks and aqua socks, like, being very, like, I grew up in New Jersey, like, this kind of dude. And I was, like, listening to every word that this guy said because he's the mystic of Molokai.
I love it.
It's awesome, man. Dude, so when I saw the waterfall, I was like, oh, shit! The mo-o! Yeah. It was awesome. So great.
Thank you, Josh, for loving this island so much and knowing so much, because I don't think any of us really had anything to add to this movie.
No, and Josh, I want to know if you're planning to head back to Molokai with your new buddy, Lou Diamond Phillips.
Well, me and LDP have talked about, you know, vacations together and wearing sick T-shirts. And when it comes up again, I'm going to definitely suggest a little Molokai action. Maybe we can hang out with, you know, the aging Hansen's disease or lepers of Kanu'upapa. So, you know.
You know what? Something's a weird little connection that you now share is, you know, that the my co-host here, Blaine, actually has a legitimate connection to Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Yeah, growing up, he was one of my grandfather's neighbors. So when we were kids, he would come over, like, for barbecues and shit, like, and he was, like, just random guy who was always at, like, parties growing up at my grandparents' home. Like, because where they lived, like, used to be, like, a place where, you know, a lot of, like, you know, like mid-level, you know, actors and shit lived in Chatsworth, California.
Can we say mid-level and Lou Diamond Phillips?
Not in the same sentence. Sir.
Yeah, they're not the same. Yeah.
I direct your attention to a little movie called La Bamba.
Yes.
I direct your attention
to a little movie called First Power, because that's my favorite John of his. But anyway.
This was more towards like TV movie era. Lou Diamond Phillips. But yeah, no, he was around. My grandfather had strange friends. Like he had like Lou Diamond Phillips and Tommy Lasorda hanging out.
Right. Wow.
It's so weird. It's so weird.
Liam doesn't love La Bamba. I think that's weird.
That's weird. You don't like La Bamba?
Oh, come on. You know?
No, I mean, for real. Like, I mean, it just feels like a movie that's hard to not like.
It's been
a long time since I watched it, but my issue with La Bamba is purely how often Josh brings it up and the fact that La Bamba... As a Latinx individual, La Bamba should be a point of pride for me. But instead, it's a point of pride for Josh because of Lou Diamond Phillips and the Pinoy invasion of all my Latinx cultural materials. Why is that? Why is he playing Richie Valens? It doesn't make any sense.
He's a remarkable actor. That's why he's playing.
It's because Lou Diamond Phillips spent all of the 80s and the 90s taking every brown part, regardless of whether he looked like that person or not. He's Native American. He's Mexican. He's Puerto Rican. He's everything. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's called acting, Liam. That's what he does. He's fucking good at it, too.
Get out of my face.
Oh, I love the way this conversation went. I'm so happy I brought this up again.
Just say, man. LDP, that dude rules. Wow.
Yeah, and I can't really add to that because I'm a white guy and we play a lot of races.
Like
the locals in Molokai are all white.
So
look,
brutal.
Look, I like Lou Diamond Phillips, but he's no Mark Dacascos.
No, who is, though? Who is? You know what I'm saying? Crying Freeman. That's all I got to tell you. Live-action Crying Freeman. Mark DeCostas.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to start to wrap things up. Guys, thanks so much for coming on. I want to give you a chance to plug your stuff one more time here. And once again, tell everybody the reason I invited them on the podcast is because I'm not allowed on theirs, despite being one of their oldest supporters and fans. And the only person that used to actually like write back and forth with them on social media on the first few episodes, but whatever, you know, I don't really feel any way about it. So, but yeah, no, guys, why don't you plug a little bit about what your people can find you specifically, give us the socials and the ways that people can reach you.
Well, we are at Cinepunks, CinePunx, on both Instagram and Twitter. So you can follow us there, and you can find us on the Facebooks, right, Liam?
Yeah.
I like how you're so unsure about our social media. It's really easy. All our social media is our name. We didn't have to compromise that in any way, shape, or form.
Well, which is funny though, because people have been like, "Yo, Josh, I can't find your show," and I'm like, "Well, what are you googling?" And they're like, "Cinepunks," and they spell punks PUNKS. And I'd be like, "Oh no, sir! You spelled it incorrectly."
You're talking about all your poser friends.
Yeah. My poser friends. What do they not even own like an Operation Ivy T-shirt? What the fuck's wrong with them?
I'm just saying, man. I think maybe they've definitely never
upped the punks before.
They've not upped the punks. No, this is true. But I'm just saying, maybe when we were starting, we should have considered, hey. This isn't the traditional way of spelling this.
First of all, you chose this name. So let's just put that out there. Second of all, I think you specifically wanted it to be the Axe for some reason. And I don't remember why, but you had a very compelling argument 5 years ago when we chose.
You're right. It's all my fault. And I accept that. I'm just saying.
Hey, where can people find you on Twitter, even though I know you hate that people would want to follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm Pogi Fatboy at PogiFatBoy. On Twitter.
I'm at Liam Rules, RULZ. Honestly, you should definitely not just follow us on social media, but go to the Cinepunks website. There you will find a variety of interesting podcasts, as well as great writing. Lots of people write for us. They're really cool. And on a personal level, definitely check out Rough Cut T-shirts. We're releasing stuff. I guess when does this episode come out?
Probably February, you're saying, right? Sometime next 2020. In a couple weeks. Early February. No,
that's cool because that means that I can say that the two designs are going to be 8 Diagram Pole Fighter and 5 Elements Ninja. So if you like them Shaw Brothers drawings, get on the website and get them as soon as you can because it's a limited thing. We won't be selling them forever.
Yeah. Dope. They're so hot. Also, I'd like to say that I will be playing the Neshaminy Creek Brewing Company on St. Patrick's Day. That will be March 17th. I know it's going to be early. I'm just saying. With the Almighty Strike Anywhere, who's like one of my favorite bands of all time.
Great live band, man. They are a great live band.
Come check me out. Crosskeys on Twitter. Crosskeys is at CrosskeysPHL. And I think that's the same thing on Instagram as well. So you can see my band there. So.
Awesome. And Blaine, why don't you take us out, my man?
No, thank you guys so much for coming by, hanging out with us, talking shit here on some fun movies. You can follow us on all the social media garbage at Grindhouse Messiah. And also, just remind everyone, Buried Alive Film Festival, we have opened back up submissions for 2019. So send us your movies, man. I've been watching them all. They're so bad right now. So I know you guys got some cool fucking things to send us. I really want to watch a competently made film. And right now, these submissions are super cheap. And if you are from this great state of Georgia, everything's free. So we look forward to just go over to Film Freeway and we'll watch your movies. So thank you, everybody. We appreciate you all tuning in. And we'll see you next time. Peace.
Takes the breath away.
I gotta go because I gotta go poop.